Welcome to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, sniff some borax, and enjoy this episode of Inner Sanctum entitled Desert Death.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is Raymond, your host. Welcome again to the Inner Sanctum. Come in, won't you? You'll have to excuse me for not getting up, but I have an awfully stiff neck. You see, I was out with a certain lady last night who collects very curious things. She spent the first half of the evening telling me how wonderful I am, but after that... Well, it's one thing when a girl tries to turn your head. It's another when she tries to twist it off. And now, friends, let me introduce someone who is a real lady. She must be a lady because she wants to reform me. Come in, Mary Bennett.
Hello, folks.
Drop a coffin and sit down, Mary.
Now, Mr. Raymond, please don't talk that way. It is nice. Why are you always pretending to be so cold-hearted and creepy? Underneath, I'm sure you're a friendly, good-natured sort of man. Yes, you are. Underneath, you're just like everybody else. I'll bet you like to come home in the evening, put on an old jacket and slippers, and then sit down to supper. Yes, sir, and I'll bet I know one of your favorite dishes, too. Noodle soup. Or most all men like noodle soup. That's why Lipton's is so popular. Lipton's noodle soup is real homemade tasting. It's got a grand chickeny flavor, and it's swimming with noodles. Egg noodles, too. You know, Lipton's noodle soup will bring a family swarming to the table quicker than a dinner bell. Mr. Raymond, someday I'm going to take you home with me and feed you a good hot bowl of Lipton's noodle soup.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Mary. And now let me invite you to come to the desert and hear the story of Desert Death. It's an original tale written by that spinner of surprise stories, Robert Newman. And our star tonight is Horace Braham. Desert, eerie and mysterious at sundown. The sun sinking slowly in a purple haze. The cactus casting long and weirdly twisting shadows. The hot wind still. The silence over all. Driving fast, a dusty car comes down a narrow desert road. At the wheel is Dan Darrell, a rancher. Next to him is his Indian friend, Toby Priest.
Still worrying, Toby?
Stop teasing me, Dan. You know I never did worry. I just told you what my people used to think it meant.
Used to think? Didn't you say we ought to postpone our trip into town today?
I did.
And when did you say it? Right after you saw them. Three vultures lying together toward the sunset. That means 3 days. A bad omen for a journey. Hey... Look,
I see him.
What's a man doing out here in the middle of nowhere on foot? Anything the matter, stranger? Needing help?
You're very kind. Our car broke down and, well, we were in a bit of a spot. Didn't know whether anyone would be likely to come along here or not.
I didn't see your friends. Well, climb in. We're going to Palo Verde. You're glad to take you that far.
Well, that's very decent of you. Thanks.
Thank you. My name's Darrell, Dan Darrell, and this is Toby Priest.
Well, I'm very happy to know you. I'm Richards, and this is Brennan and Smith.
How do you do?
Howdy. You're British, ain't you?
Why, yes. Clever of you to spot it. We're on our way out to the coast. One of those hush-hush missions. That's why it's so important we get into town.
Oh, sure, sure. Which way'd you come? Medicine Creek or Route 12?
Why, Medicine Creek. It sounded more scenic.
You're lying, Dad. You know that, don't you?
What makes you say that?
Toby, use your head. He doesn't look.
Mr. Darrow, surely it's considered rude to whisper in front of strangers, even here in America, isn't it?
What? Oh, sorry.
Yes, I'm sure you will be. But first, I must insist on knowing what you were saying.
Insist? What do you mean, insist? This is my car and this is a...
I know. A free country. But this is a gun. That's why I can insist. And now, will you tell me what you were saying?
I was saying it, so I'll tell you. I said you were lying, that you weren't British at all.
No? Then who are we?
I think that you're Nazi prisoners who escaped from that camp up near Post City.
Oh? And what makes you think that?
First, none of your clothes fit you, so they're obviously not yours. Second, you said your car broke down, but there wasn't any car around. Third, you said you came by way of Medicine Creek, and that road's closed.
All right. Stop the car and let us get it over with.
You mean shoot them? Not so quick, Bernard. We can use them for a while yet. At least one of them.
What the devil do you mean?
Of course, your Indian friend is right. Very clever, too. But since I have a gun, you will take orders from me. Our first need is water. You have any in the car?
No.
And then we will have to find some.
Yeah? Where'd you expect to find water in the desert?
I told you we were Nazis, Darrow. I did not tell you that we were Rommel's men from the Africa Corps. That means we know the desert, any desert, better than anyone on Earth. Those hills off there to the left. Take the left-hand road at that fork there and head toward them.
But
do as I say.
How much further you want me to go up this wagon track?
Slow up. Isn't that yes, the shack right next to the cliff. Stop.
Looks deserted, but there, next to it. Is that not a well?
It should be. Brenner, go see if there's any water in it.
Double, Herr Colonel.
You two come with us. We'll go look at the shack. What is this place? Those terraces up there on the cliff?
A pueblo. Cliff dwellings. Centuries ago, my people lived in villages like this.
There is water in it, Herr Colonel. Even a bucket to get it up with.
Good. Come into the house. Match, Schmidt. From the dust, I'd say no one had been here for a good many years. Prospector's cabin, wasn't it?
Probably.
That means... there's what I want. Shovel.
What the devil do you want that for? Want to dig yourself a grave?
Yes, Darrow, exactly. But not for me.
Huh? What you mean?
Precisely what I said. Sit down. Make yourselves comfortable, and I will explain things to you.
I'll stand if you don't mind.
Oh, not at all. We Nazis are very objective, analytical people. We decided we needed a car to make our escape in. Now we have one. We also decided we needed someone to drive the car and get us safely across the border. That means we can use one of you. The other one will die.
You wouldn't dare.
My dear Darrow, outside of the thousands of men we killed in North Africa who don't count, we killed at least two guards in making our escape. Do you really think one more death means anything to us? The only question is, which of you shall die?
This one here. He talks too much.
Well, that's not quite fair, Brenner. He's just, shall we say, less stoical than the Indian. On the other hand, I think that in the long run, he would probably prove easier to handle, less dangerous. That means that the Indian dies.
What? Why, you...
Shut up, you!
Thank you, Brenner. Schmidt, take the gun, the shovel, and our Indian friend, and watch over him while he digs his grave. Very nice. Very nice indeed. course, I personally would prefer a deeper grave, but that's up to you.
The depth is not important. The only thing that matters is that it faces west. That is why I dug it with the head against the cliff. An old tribal custom.
Very interesting. Similar to the Egyptians. But of course, they believed in a life after death.
My people believe in a life after death also, Colonel. And in this case, I think I can promise that I will not rest easy in my grave.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Hear this too, men from across the seas. Men with death in your hearts. For the evil you would do, evil will follow you like a hungry wolf.
What is that?
What he just mentioned. A wolf.
Though you bury me deep, the earth will not hide me till you have paid for your crimes. Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
Now, Herr Colonel.
Yes, Brenner.
Oh, you can't, you...
Oh. Very good, Schmidt. I'll take the gun now. Fill in the grave, then meet us back at the cabin.
Ooh, what a place. It's worse than Quatara.
I wish you'd sit down, Daryl, and stop staring out of the window.
You're worried about your friend. I buried him very nicely.
I'm not worried about him. I'm thinking about what he said before you killed him. I should think that you think about it, too.
That? We have had more curses laid on us in more languages than you have hairs on your head.
What's that?
Must be the wind.
No, it is different. More like some kind of musical instrument.
But there's no one around here but us. There hasn't been anyone living in those houses up on the cliff for centuries.
It's just the wind, I tell you. But if you want to, go take a look.
Go take a look, I said.
Jawohl, Herr Kohl.
It's too dark. There's too much sand blowing to see anything. But wait. Go there near the foot of the cliff. There's something. It looks like... Evil God. It's the Indian. He's lying there. Out of his grave.
Oh, you bury me deep. The earth will not hide me. Till you are paid for your crimes. Here were your upkills. Here, too, will you die.
A 100 curses in a dozen different tongues. Perhaps they did mean 3 deaths. If so, who are the others that'll die and who will live?
Gosh, Mr. Raymond, this is exciting.
What? Oh, Mary Bennett, I've overlooked you in all this desert. Tell me, Mary, whom do you hope will die, huh?
Well, I don't like to see anybody killed, but those Nazis sure ought to be clapped in jail.
Mm-hmm. And deprived of their Lipton's noodle soup, aren't they?
Well, I should say. Lipton's noodle soup is much too good for fellas like them. It belongs to law-abiding folks who've got a right to sit down to a plate of homemade tasting soup. And say, that's just the kind of noodle soup you get when you use Lipton's. Lipton's is the noodle soup with the old-fashioned flavor, you know. Brimming with noodles and blessed with a real chickeny taste. Yes, it takes Lipton's to show how good a noodle soup can be.
Now, Mary, don't get so excited. Stay calm. Why don't you go and perch on that tombstone over there while I go on with the story of death in the deserts? I'm warning you, if I do go on, you'll be seeing strange sights and hearing strange sounds every time you put out the lights. But it's your funeral. It's just a moment later now. The 3 Nazis are still standing at the open door of the deserted cabin, staring out into the darkness. And the colonel turned sharply, glares at Daryl.
What was that you said, Daryl?
I was just repeating what Tova said. Before you murdered him.
It's true, Herr Colonel. That's what he did say. The earth will not hide me. And there he is out of his grave, lying there.
Shut up. Fine Nazi you are. A fine example of the Afrika Korps. Listening to the ravings of a savage and believing them. Schmidt, where did you bury the Indian? In the sand. Then this wind came along and blew the sand away. And that's all.
And that strange man?
Another trick of the wind. But if it bothers you to see him lying there, go on out and bury him again. Deeper this time.
No, Herr Colonel, no.
Now that's an order.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
Franz Schmidt seems to be getting a bit rattled.
That's why I sent him out there. Nothing like facing a fear to overcome it.
Colonel Ulrich, do you not think it is about time that Schmidt came back?
He's only been gone about 5 or 10 minutes. I told him to dig the grave deep this time.
I know, but I do not see him out there anywhere.
Well, how could you expect to when it's so dark and when the sand is blowing like that? Maybe we'd better go out and see what's taking him so long. And you too, Mr. Darrell, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Schmidt! Schmidt, where are you?
I lost the idiot. Probably wandered off into the desert.
Schmidt!
Well, look. The Indian. He is still lying there. He never did bury him.
That means Schmidt never even got over there. Must have lost his way right after he got outside. Schmidt!
I think you can save your breath, Colonel Ulrich. Come on over here. The well.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Schmidt. Dead.
Well, why are you looking at me like that, Brenner? Exactly. As I said, he lost his way in the darkness, the sandstorm, fell down the well.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is what must have happened.
As for you, Mr. Darrell, since you discovered Schmidt, you shall have the pleasure of burying your friend the Indian again.
Yeah, woo. Yeah, good.
I'm sorry, I never did appreciate the American type of humor. Now get busy with that show.
May I just point out that while it's easy for you to knock me down when my hands are tired, it's not so easy for me to use a shovel.
Oh, I intend to untie you. But please remember always that I have a gun and that Brenner and I have every intention of getting away from here. I'm happy to see that you've stopped pacing the floor and looking out the window, Mr. Darrell. That means you've stopped expecting something miraculous to happen that will save you.
Is that what you think it means?
Frankly, no. In fact, I think just the opposite. You're looking much more cheerful than before. You're thinking one of them is dead. Now it'll be that much easier to get away. It really pains me to disillusion you. Schmidt was a sergeant. A fool. I can assure you that neither Brenner nor myself are going to be bothered by strange noises or tricks of the wind. Right, Brenner?
Of course not, Colonel.
Good. And now, if we're to make an early start, I think we should get some rest. Brenner, you take the first watch and wake me at midnight. I advise you to get some rest, too, Darrell. Maybe you'll be able to dream of some way of escaping.
Thanks. But I'm not sleeping.
As you wish. Good night.
Quite a character.
He was one of the best soldiers in the Africa Corps.
Yeah? Where's Africa Corps now? Where are you? This isn't Africa, Brenner. This is America. This is a part of America where strange things happen. Things that even the Indians can't explain.
Indians. Ignorant savages. It's a devilish music again. Where does it come from?
I thought you said it was a wind. Or was it Ulrich that said that?
It must be the wind. It must.
Though you bury me deep, the earth will not hide me till you pay for your crimes.
What is that?
That was what Tover said just before you killed him.
Schmidt was first, Brenner. You will be next. I'm waiting, Brenner. Waiting.
You're...
waiting.
You heard that, Tover?
Yeah. I heard it.
You're lying. You're lying, I say. You're just trying to frighten me.
What? Who's trying to frighten you? What's going on?
It is nothing here, Colonel. Just that
That music again. For a moment, it sounded as if someone was calling my name.
Someone was calling your name, Brenner. The dead man. You know you heard it. So?
There it is again. You hear it?
Just that same noise, the wind.
Look, Woolwich, look. That Indian, he's out of his grave again.
How can you tell? It's too dark to see.
But I know he is. I know it.
I'm very disappointed in you, Brenner. You're losing your grip, slipping.
Sorry, Herr Colonel. It is just this place, the nervous tension, the mating.
Just being sorry isn't enough. Fear is a weakness. As much of a weakness as pity. You know that as Nazis, we cannot tolerate either one. And you also know what you must do, don't you?
No. No, Herr Colonel. No.
You must face your fear and overcome it. You must go out there and prove to yourself that you are not afraid. That you've just been imagining things the way Schmidt did.
But Schmidt...
Schmidt was a fool, and he had an accident. You are an officer, and you will not have an accident. Now go ahead and convince yourself that this is all nonsense.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
But leave the gun with me. What's out there is imaginary, but Mr. Darrell is very real. If I didn't have a gun, he might get ideas.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel. Here. I will be back in a few minutes.
You're looking at me very strangely, Mr. Darrell. Perhaps now you're starting to understand the fiber of the Nazi character. And perhaps now you're beginning to realize why you can never win this war. Because we allow nothing to defeat us or stand in our way. Any sign of weakness is ruthlessly stamped out. Abel! God, what's that?
Sounded to me like Brenner.
Outside, quick. And don't try to get away or I'll shoot you down in your tracks.
Okay. Which way?
Towards the cliff, where we buried the Indian. That's where he went and... What's that over there?
My guess is that it's your friend, Brenner. Maybe you'd better make sure.
It is Brenner. Dead. Strangled.
So it was all imagination, eh? Just face your fear and overcome it. Aren't you feeling just a little frightened, Colonel?
Yeah. No. There's some rational explanation for everything that happened. Look. The Indian. He is out of his grave again. And that's the answer. He wasn't dead. But this should take care of him. There. And you will notice that even at a moment like this, I look ahead. One shot before and four now. That still leaves one bullet for you, if it should prove necessary.
You think of everything, don't you?
Yes, my friend, everything. Now get into that car. We're not going to wait until morning. We're leaving here right now.
I thought you had everything figured out. You weren't frightened.
What's that?
What's what?
That noise, that music. It's like the music we heard after we killed the Indian.
I don't hear anything.
Oh, but you must hear it. You must. Listen. It's coming from over there.
For the evil you have done, evil will follow you like a hungry wolf. Though you bury me deep, the earth will not hide me till you have paid for your crimes.
Did you hear that? Did you hear it?
Yeah. I heard it.
Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
No. No. You're dead. You're dead, I tell you. I killed you.
First Schmidt. Then Brenner. Now you.
But you're dead, I tell you. And the dead don't speak. I can't be really hearing you unless... Mad. No. I can't let that happen. I can't. There's one way. The Nazi way. A way to fool you all. This is why you'll never beat us. Never. Never. Oh.
Toby. Toby. Where are you?
Over here. Near the foot of the cliff.
Are you all right?
That first bullet creased my head. I was already dropping by the time he fired. Outside of that, I'm all right.
Figured that was what had happened when Schmidt went down the well. I knew it was an accident.
I was pretty happy that it was you that buried me the second time. That you put my face against the cliff, left a hole for me to breathe. The first time, well, it was pretty tough until the wind blew the sand off.
Yeah, but what about when he shot you again? That ungodly music.
It wasn't me he shot that second time. It was Schmidt. I pulled his body out of the well. And I figured that in the dark, no one would be able to tell the difference. As for the music, that's why I dug the grave here. You see these holes here in that cliff? My people drilled them centuries ago. The wind blows through them. Makes weird music. This bottom hole was blocked up, but I opened it while I was digging the grave.
Talking of graves, there's three of them we should be digging right now. Just one more thing I'd like to ask you, Toby.
What's that?
What you said this morning, those three buzzards flying together toward the west, does it really mean three deaths?
There were three deaths, weren't there, Dan?
Better boy, Toby. Never give a Nazi an even break, unless it's in the neck. As for our three visiting murderers, they may not like our sense of humor, but they can't complain about our poetic justice. After all, it was in the desert that they got their just deserts. Well, Mary Bennett, did you like the desert with its sand and wind and weird music? Would you like to live there?
Well, I wouldn't mind so much. You know, I believe a woman can make a good home in some pretty out-of-the-way places, the way the old-time housewives did. But, well, I'd want to lay in a supply of good modern food. Food that's easy to make, like Lipton's noodle soup. Say, that noodle soup of Lipton's would really put some cheer in the desert, wouldn't it?
Yes, of course, Mary, of course. Remind me to take Lipton's with me on my next safari. We must have a word of advice. It is. If you should wake up one of these nights in a cold sweat, convinced that there's something or someone in your room, and if when you look toward the window you should see a strange figure silhouetted in the moonlight, then pull the blankets up over your head and don't look out again. It'll be one of our three friends from tonight's story. One of the Africa corpses. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Puppets by Patrick Quentin. Well, now I guess it's time to close that there squeaking door until next week at this same time. So until next Tuesday night. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Folks, here we are outside the squeaking door. And I guess we're all pretty thirsty after all that talk about deserts. Well, I know just the thing that'll put us back to normal again. It's Lipton tea. Yes, a cup of that brisk Lipton tea would do just fine. And did you notice that word brisk? B-R-I-S-K. It's a mighty important word in tea language. The tea experts always use it. It means that Lipton tea has a lively flavor, never wishy-washy. That's why most folks prefer Lipton's to any other kind. Don't forget, that's Lipton tea. And don't forget to tune in again next Tuesday night to Inner Sanctum.
It's a spanking new year, yet we're still stuck in the past. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of The Six Shooter entitled More Than Kin.
In a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Later this evening, listen to the NBC Star Playhouse with two of your favorite stars. Hear Stroke of Fate and the story of what might have happened if fate had reversed historical facts. And be sure to keep tuned for the dramatic story of Last Man Out. It's a wonderful lineup of great programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Confess thee of thy sin, Desdemona, or indeed thou art to die.
Milord of the law, have mercy on me.
I say amen.
And you mercy too. I never did offend you in my life.
Oh, perjured woman. Oh.
Nay, I speak the truth. I never did offend.
You're offending us, lady. Yeah, yeah. Hey, who is this guy Shakespeare anyway?
Oh, banish me, my lord, but kill me not.
Don't, trumpet.
Kill me tomorrow, but let me live tonight.
Be back, kill her tonight.
Yeah, let's get it over with.
Nay, nay. The lady, if you stay...
But half an hour.
Holy mackerel, not another half hour then.
Go on, Otello. Put her out of her misery.
Well, how about our misery?
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen.
He said he don't mean us.
Ladies and gentlemen. It appears that our Thespian efforts do not meet with your approval.
Appears?
My company and I have played before all the crowned heads of Europe. We thought the enlightened community of Virtue City would welcome an opportunity to witness the works of the immortal bard as performed by Madame de la Seine, the distinguished French actress, and by your humble servant. We were mistaken. To err is human, to forgive divine. I forgive you. The performance is concluded. Good night.
Hey, now, just a minute. You mean you ain't going on to the end of this thing?
You have understood me correctly, sir.
What's Shakespeare going to think?
Yeah, what about the money we paid? Do we get it back?
What about...
Silence! Silence, please! My company has more than earned a meager pittance.
You ain't earned nothing until the show's over.
That's right. Either you finish up your acting up there, you give us our dough.
This ultimatum is outrageous. I reject it flatly.
Just you stay up there on that stage, mister. I said...
Please, sir, there are ladies present. Someone might be injured.
You going on with the show, ain't you? Well?
The performance will continue. But under protest, sir. Under severe protest.
I hadn't been back to Virtue City since the second silver strike. The first mines played out, 10, 15 years ago, and the town had been crumbling away like a stale loaf of bread. But the new strike last spring, oh, that, for the looks of things, is even bigger than the first one. The old stores all opened up again. Half a dozen new ones being built. The new railroad accounted for some of the prosperity. Anyway, that's why I'd come to town. I was supposed to meet the train from Chicago and pick up some spare parts for the pump at the Round Y Ranch where I was working. Train wasn't due until the next day, so I headed over to the hotel to see about getting a room. The clerk was sitting behind the registration counter looking through some kind of a contraption. I didn't know what it was. Sure had never seen a gadget like that before. excuse me.
Sorry, mister. Didn't know you was there.
Well,
got me a new set of pictures. I'm sort of anxious to try them out, you know.
Pictures?
My stereoscope.
Oh.
Why, you seen a stereoscope before, ain't you, mister?
No, can't say as I have.
Why, it's the newest thing. All the folks back east have got them. Here, just let me show you, huh? Now, you wait a minute. Just wait till I find Niagara Falls. Yeah, here it is. Now, you just look through the front end there, huh? That's right. Well,
I'll be doggone.
Why,
it just looks like that water come right at you, doesn't it? Why, you'd think it was real. You'd think you were right there.
Here, let me show you another one, huh? Now, let me see. Pyramids. I'm the only fellow in town got the pyramids.
Pyramids?
Yeah, they're in Egypt, you know. Yeah. Huh? There. Now, how's that?
Why, just look at... Oh, I can't believe it. Well, that fella's standing out in front of the pyramids. It's just like you could touch him. You could just reach out and touch him. I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
Yeah, you just wait till I find that redskin to shoot in there. Golly, way he's aiming it. Well, if you didn't know it was a picture, you'd swear he was looking at...
Key, if you please.
Oh, sure, Mr. Plunkett, sure.
And you may as well have my bill ready. We'll be checking out this afternoon.
Oh, thought you were supposed to give another show tonight.
The performance has been canceled.
Hey, Arch.
Hey, beg your pardon, sir?
Arch, well, don't you remember me?
You seem to have the advantage, sir. I don't believe that... Britt Ponsett.
Well, what the thunder are you doing in Virtue City, Arch? Why, I haven't seen you
since our triumphal tour of Texas, wasn't it, Britt?
Why?
When we were the honored guests of the governor, my company and I. You remember he insisted that we stay at the executive mansion?
Now, Arch.
I shall never forget the warmth of our reception there. The people of Texas have a true appreciation of the art of the drama, unlike some of our more recent audiences.
Audiences?
Well, come along, old boy. Come along. You must join us for a spot of tea. Marguerite would be so delighted to see you again.
Marguerite, who's she?
My lovely wife.
Oh.
Don't tell me you've forgotten her.
Well, I thought her name was...
We've taken the presidential suite, of course. If you'll just follow me.
Well, now, hold on, Arch. I've got to see about a room for myself.
Oh, nonsense. The clerk will take care of these trivial details. This way, dear boy. This way. Here we are, my dear Britt. Enter.
Hey, what the Sam Hills happened to you, Arch? What happened to your voice?
All in good time, my good man, all in good time. Marguerite?
That's you, Arch?
Yes, my dear. I've brought someone with me.
I have been taking a little nap to snooze, you know. Oh, Brad! Why, you son of a gun, where did you come from?
Oh, Maggie, how are you?
He was downstairs in the lobby, Mag. I had to get him up here fast before he spilled the beans.
Oh, that's right. You don't know we're in the profession, do you, Brett?
The what?
Show business, Brett. Show business. Maggie and I are actors now. We got our own company.
No.
Permit me to introduce myself. Archibald Plunkett, late of London, Paris, New York, and, for an unpleasant moment, Virtue City.
Plunkett, eh?
Couldn't keep on calling myself Archie Plunkett. Once I gave up the dry goods emporium and started acting.
Oh, I see.
And this charming lady is my wife, the toast of the continent, Marguerite de Lesseigne.
What do you mean you changed your name too, Maggie?
Oh, just fancied it up a speck. I used to be Maggie Rivers before I married Arch.
Well, we looked on a map. There's a French river called the Seine, so,
I just don't seem fair somehow.
What do you mean, Britt?
Well, your folks give you a hand. All seems like you ought to stick with it.
Oh, not when you're in the profession.
Is that so?
Sure, most actors have to change their name.
They do?
Yeah, lots of them.
Well, I guess if it's customary, Gee whiz, you're actors now, huh?
Well, Arch wasn't much good at business, Britt, you know that. He always hated to stay in one place. And then when the drought hit, well, we were cleaned out.
Yeah, it was right about then Doc Ryder comes through with his medicine show. Remember the Doc, Britt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
And his guitar player left a flat. Run off with that girl he used to do the singing, the one with the yellow tights.
Yellow tights? I don't think... Oh, yeah.
So the Doc needed somebody to take their place, and, well, Maggie always had a real sweet singing voice, and... Seeing as how we were broke, anyhow.
Doggone tights never did fit me.
Well, you're not still with the medicine show, are you?
Oh, we sure ain't. Anyhow, we struck out on our own, started in doing serious acting. You know, Shakespeare.
Shakespeare? Oh.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
I see.
Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take up arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing.
That's pretty good.
And then. That's Hamlet.
Oh, that's...
To tell you the truth, Britt, I was going to appear as the melancholy dame this very evening. Circumstances have compelled us to abandon the production.
Is that so?
Yeah, there was a little trouble during our performance of Othello last night.
You mean the folks didn't like the show?
Well, when they started shooting up at the ceiling, that was the impression that we got.
Well, now they shouldn't have done that.
I couldn't agree with you more completely. Anyway, we're going on to Rocky Falls. Maybe folks there will have a little more...
Oh, who on earth?
Britt, now you won't say anything. You won't give us away.
Oh, no, of course not.
Your servant, sir?
Forgive me for intruding. Are you Archibald Plunkett, the actor?
I am he.
Delighted to meet you, Mr. Plunkett.
And what may I do for you, sir?
I happen to be spending the day in Virtue City, and I saw a theatrical poster advertising a performance of Hamlet, one of my favorite plays. Unfortunately, when I tried to buy tickets, I was informed that your company isn't appearing this evening.
That is correct, sir. A sudden change in our schedule. We have so many engagements, we're unable to fill them all.
I understand, Mr. Plunkett. I understand. The vagaries of show business. See, I happen to be in the theater myself.
Indeed?
My card.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry I won't have the opportunity of witnessing your performance. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Old faker. Why, I bet he's no more in show business than you are, Britt. Probably thought we'd give him a couple of free passes.
Oh, no.
Oh, Arch, what's the matter?
Oh, no. It couldn't. I'm seeing things.
Britt. Here, Britt, what's it look like to you? The name on this card. What's it say?
Let's see. It says Barnum. P.T. Barnum. Yeah, that's the name, all right. Printing's real clear.
We'll return to James Stewart as the Six Shooter in just a moment. Now, during the holiday season, with more cars than usual on the road and adverse weather conditions, think a minute. If a child should dash across an intersection, if a tire should blow out, could you stop in time to save a life? As always, during a holiday season, you must be more alert than ever in following simple safety rules. Keep your windshield clear of fog and snow. Be certain your headlights and wipers are working properly. In wet weather, never slam on your brakes. It's a sure way to put your car into a skid. And always follow other cars at a safe distance. Don't be one of those unfortunates who will lose his life in a traffic accident this Yuletide. Be careful, friends. Live to have a safe and happy Christmas. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
The next couple of minutes or two, Arch and Maggie just stood there, looking at each other. And the way they were looking at each other, I tell you, It was the same kind of an expression a calf gets just before you hit him with a branding iron. And then Arch walked over to the window and raised it up just like he was getting ready to jump out. I thought sure Maggie would stop him. She didn't. All she did was just grab the calling card out of my hand and start rubbing her finger over the printing on it.
Arch, it's real engraven.
Yeah. Why can't I do it, Maggie? Why can't I end it all right here and now?
Oh, now, what are you talking about, Archer? What's got into you folks, anyhow?
P.T. Barnum, Britt. You know who P.T. Barnum is, don't you?
Well, he said he was in show business.
In show business? He is show business. Jenny Lind, General Tom Thumb, half the stars in America owe their careers to him.
Yeah?
Don't you say, Britt, he was going to come to the theater tonight. He was going to watch his act without us even asking him.
Well,
and if he liked us, well, there's no telling what would have happened. He might have hired us himself.
An actor gets a chance like this only once. To appear before P.T. Barnum.
Arch? Arch, maybe it's not too late.
It is too late.
No, listen now. Now, the company is still in town. All we'd have to do is unpack the costume.
The performance has been canceled, Maggie.
Then we'll uncancel it. I'll round up the rest of the cast, change your train ticket. Sure, that's it. And you get over to the opera house. Make sure they haven't let it out to somebody else.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
What about an audience?
Oh, yes. Well, I tell you, give some of the kids around town passes. They'll spread the word quick enough. Well, now, just don't stand there, Arch. Get moving.
Oh, all right, Maggie. All right.
Well, Maggie,
Britt, now you go and find Mr. Barnum.
What?
He must be staying in the hotel. The clerk will give you the room number.
Well,
Tell him we rearranged our schedule again. We're playing Hamlet tonight. But for heaven's sakes, don't let him know it's because of him.
Oh.
And tell him he won't need tickets. We're saving him the front box. Well, hurry up, Britt. Hurry up. Before I make some other plans.
All right, sure. All right, Maggie.
Come in.
Mr. Barnum?
Yes. Oh, hello there.
Howdy, my name's Britt Ponsett.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Ponsett. What can I do for you?
Well, my friends, the Plunketts, asked me to find you.
Oh?
They've sort of changed their plans. It seems they're going to stay over in Virtue City tonight and give the show.
Oh, I see.
And they asked me to tell you that they're saving a box for you if you'd care to use it tonight.
That's very considerate, Mr. Ponsett. I'd be delighted. Are you with the company?
How's that?
Are you one of the performers I'm to have the pleasure of watching tonight?
No. I'm just a friend.
Oh. Well, thank you for delivering the message.
Don't mention it, Mr. Barnum. Don't mention it. Well, I didn't see any more of Arch and Maggie that afternoon. I figured they'd have plenty to keep them busy. This acting job is about like anything else, I guess. There must be a certain amount of work to it. Anyway, about 7 o'clock, I was up in my room putting on a clean shirt, getting fixed up to go to the theater and watch their play. Come in.
Hello, Britt.
Oh, hello, Arch. Maggie. Well, what's the matter?
You were just born under an unlucky star, I guess.
Oh?
It's my fault. I never should have suggested giving a performance tonight in the first place.
Well, what? Couldn't you get the opera house?
No. No, it's available.
Well, Mr. Barnum's coming. He told me so himself.
Oh, heaven forbid.
Well, I thought you were so anxious for him to see you. That...
Not just to see us, but to like us, to appreciate our talent.
Oh, if I'd only stop to think, Arch.
Oh, don't blame you, my dear. Blame myself. Should have realized the whole idea of our playing tonight was out of the question. Now I've sent those kids all over town.
Well, maybe we can catch an early train. Sneak away before anyone knows.
Now, hold on there. Now, what are you both so down on the mouth about? Now, you got the theater, and you're going to have an audience, Mr. Barnum included.
Well, that's just it, Britt, the audience.
Huh?
It'll be the same folks who came last night.
Oh, I see.
They boo us, make fun of us, probably start shooting again.
And what'll Mr. Barnum think?
We're the worst actors he's ever seen. That's what he'll think.
Yeah, but there ought to be some way of maintaining order. What about the sheriff? Here's a man to do it.
Already seen him.
Yeah? Well, what'd he say?
Said we ain't any better than we was last night. He's advising the boys in the audience not to aim at the ceiling.
Is that so?
One big opportunity, Britt. And it's ruined before we ever got started.
Well, maybe there won't be any trouble. Maybe the audience will like this. What is Hamlet? Maybe they'll like that better than the one you gave them before.
They won't. It isn't one of our most successful presentations.
Uh-huh. You couldn't try something else, could you?
We only do two plays, Britt. Othello and Hamlet.
I see. Well, I guess it wouldn't be much point in repeating that Othello, huh?
No, wouldn't.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm awful sorry, Arch. I wish there was something I could do.
Do you, Britt? Do you really wish there was something you could do?
Why, sure, Maggie, sure.
Well, as a matter of fact, we did have one possible solution.
So?
It sort of involves you, in a way.
What, me?
You're practically saving our lives, Brett, if you do it.
Explain it to him, Arch.
Well, maybe you'd better do the explaining.
Oh, no. It really was your idea, Arch. Go on, Arch.
Well, you see, but now, don't say no until you hear me out.
Well, I'm not saying anything.
You see, we were thinking most of the folks here in town must know you by sight, and they know you're the six-shooter. So, it...
I said no. You can be darn sure of that. And I kept saying it over and over and over again for the next hour and a half. What they were suggesting was just tall foolishness, that's all. I just had to turn them down, that's all. Just had to do it. And they must have known I wouldn't agree to a thing like that. But no matter how hard I talked, they just talked harder. And being actors, they had strong voices too, you know. Well, the next thing I knew, somehow they'd managed to drag me along with them to the opera house. Anyhow, after the piano solo by Thelma Featherhill, the curtain went up and the show got underway. Started out all right, too. Audience seemed to be paying attention. Nobody was creating any ruckus or anything, at least not at first.
Oh, that this too, too solid flesh would melt. That it should come to this. But 2 months dead. Oh, frailty, thy name is woman. Oh, fie on. Oh, fie.
Yes, fie on you too.
Yet the salt of most unrighteous tears has left the flushing in her galled eyes. She married.
Sounds like old Lady Crandall. She only waited 2 weeks after Jed Crandall kicked the bucket.
No, it cannot come to good. But break my heart, for I must hold my tongue.
Better get a good grip on it, mister.
You see, Bridget, you just gotta do it.
I can't do it. I can't do it.
Oh, look at poor Archie out there. Isn't it just enough to break your heart?
So weary. Pale, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world.
Your acting's a little flat too, mister.
Go on, Britt, that's your cue.
What cue?
Go on, that's it.
Oh, good Horatio, I'm glad to see you well.
Hail to your lordship, Britt.
Huh?
Hail to your lordship.
Oh, yeah. Hail to your lordship.
What make you from Wittenberg, Horatio?
How's that?
A truant disposition.
A truant disposition.
Can't get to school, kids. Here comes the truant officer.
Hear your enemy say so. Nor shall you do mine ear that violence to make it touch of your own report against you.
No, he's bringing out the report card.
Sid, you better take it easy.
Huh?
Don't you see who that is, that other actor fella?
What are you talking about?
It's Britt Ponsett.
Ponsett, the six-shooter? You must be crazy.
He's staying at the hotel. I've seen him this afternoon.
Well, what's he doing up there on that stage?
He's a friend of them actors.
Oh.
If I was you, I'd keep my big mouth shut from here on in. There ain't no sword he's wearing under that rig. That's a six-gun, plain as day.
It followed hard upon. Thrift, Horatio. The funeral baked meats did coldly furnish for the marriage table.
would I had met my dearest foe in heaven, ere I had seen that
day. Alas! Oh, war is made. Now cracks a noble heart. Good night, sweet prince. Sweet,
And flights of angels sing thee to thy rest. Rest!
And flocks of angels sing you to your rest.
Golly, we can't ever thank you enough. Why, if it hadn't been for you, I just don't know what would have ever happened. Oh, golly.
And did you see? He stayed through to the end. Mr. Barnum did. Right through to the end. Britt, you were great.
Arch, I never felt so foolish in my whole life.
Do you think he'll come backstage, Arch? Mr. Barnum?
Somebody help me get out of this thing, will you?
Come in. Why, Mr. Barnum.
Good evening. I just wanted to drop by and tell you how much I enjoyed your performance tonight.
We are most honored, sir. Honored!
Your future in the theater is assured. And you there, Ponsett.
Who, me?
You told me you weren't an actor.
Oh, he was just sort of filling in, Mr. Barnum.
Oh, I realize you weren't up in the part, Mr. Ponsett. But such stage presence. Why, the way that audience quieted down when you walked on, I've never seen anything like it before in my life. Never. Now, if you're seriously interested in the theater as a career, I would be very happy.
No, thanks very much, Mr. Barnum. I'm not interested. No, that's real kind of you, but, no, thanks. Oh, no. Well, sir, I got out of that theater just as fast as my leg could carry me. Gee, I just don't see how anybody can set out to be an actor. All those people staring at you and that sweat running down the back of your neck. Holy smoke. Worse than any gunfight, I'm sure. Of course, that applause, that's after it was over. That applause, that did sound kind of good. And Mr. Barnum, he's very nice about saying that I had stage presence, whatever that means. I suppose a man could get used to play acting if he had to. Sure is a scary business, huh?
NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt, and the transcribed story is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Tony Barrett, Ted Bliss, Marvin Miller, and Dan O'Herlihy. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney speaking.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.